Ladies and gentlemen, good day, and welcome to the Thomas Cook India Limited Q4 FY19 earnings conference call, hosted by IIFL Capital Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal the operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Abhijit Akella from IIFL Capital Limited. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Lizanne. Ladies and gentlemen, very good afternoon, and thank you for joining us on the 4Q FY19 post-results conference call of Thomas Cook India Limited. My name is Abhijit Akella. I'm the mid-cap analyst at IIFL, and it's my great pleasure to introduce the senior management team of the Thomas Cook Group, who are here with us to discuss the results. We'll begin the call with opening remarks by Mr. Madhavan Menon, Chairman and Managing Director, following which we'll open up the call for a Q&A session. I would now like to hand the call over to Mr. Menon to take it forward. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Yeah. Thank you, Abhijit. Good afternoon, everybody. Abhijit has done the introduction. Let me sort of dive straight into the entire process. First of all, I think let me just qualify the numbers in two specific instances. First of all, that the 2018 numbers includes just 11 months of Quess, because we deconsolidated Quess as of March 1st, 2019, and 2018, sorry. Therefore, that is not a comparable number. The second point I want to mention is that there is an accounting income that is booked in the same month, that is March 2018, of approximately 5.3 billion. Am I correct, Debashish?
Yes, 5,300 crores.
Yeah. 5,300 crores, which is just accounting, is an accounting entry, and therefore does not, you know, does not appear in the 2018-2019 financial numbers. Now, if I were to then switch to the performance of the group, both at a consolidated and at the Thomas Cook standalone point for the full year of financial year 2019, 2018-2019, then I think, you know, there are a couple of outstanding features which I must mention. That the consolidated revenue from operations for the full financial year increased by 18% to 66 billion rupees. The consolidated profit before tax made a significant jump from 53 million to 573 million. I might add, this does not include any Quess income. The 48.2582% stake that we have in Quess represents a share of only 495 million out of this number, primarily because we have adjusted for amortization of intangibles that arose from the Quess deconsolidation. The earnings, if I look at the revenue, there's been a 19% growth in the travel services and a 14% growth in the foreign exchange business during the course of the financial year. If I look at the earnings before tax of the foreign exchange and the travel services businesses, increased by 29% to 265 crores from 206 crores. As far as the fourth quarter of 2019, income from operations grew on a consolidated basis, grew by 14% to 13.6 billion. We, in this business, we witnessed a strong performance by the inbound business as well as the outbound business. I think a metric for the outbound business is forward bookings, which are currently growing at 15% year-on-year. If I look at the Thomas Cook standalone numbers for the financial year ended March 31st, 2019, we witnessed strong trading across all the businesses. Revenue from operations for the financial year increased by 18% to 23 billion. Adjusting for the one-time accounting gain of 5.3 billion on account of the Quess deconsolidation, the Thomas Cook standalone PBT increased from 41 million to 39.5 million. In the financial year 2019, we saw strong growth across both the holiday business as well as the MICE business. If you look at the quarter four of 2019 on a standalone basis, this is an investment quarter. However, I think what must be mentioned here is the fact that we had strong performances from the holiday business, the MICE business, the corporate travel business, and the foreign exchange business, all of which clocked almost double-digit growth. We also saw the e-business platform witness a strong growth in sales across all our business lines, both in the holiday space as well as the foreign exchange space. I think I will leave it, to Debashish to explain the numbers during the course of the P&A, the Q&A time. But I just want to sort of spend a few minutes talking about the various initiatives that we've taken during the financial year and which will continue through the course of the next couple of years. I think the first one is in terms of technology. All the businesses, including the inbound or what we call the destination management business, as well as the outbound businesses, are going through transitions from one technology to another or enhancement of existing technology. Now, this is a long multi-year process in that we are preparing ourselves for the various changes that the travel industry is witnessing. This will also facilitate, for example, in the DMS business, to allow aggregators operating in various source markets to integrate directly into the various systems that we operate across our DMS network and make bookings directly, an important element of the booking process in the source markets, both in Europe, Asia, as well as America. I think in the outbound business, we have several initiatives. In addition to the technology enhancements, we are also going through a customer lifecycle, customer experience lifecycle project which will run over the next couple of years. Now, when I talk about a customer experience lifecycle, the basic intent is that we move from selling products into selling experiences to our customers to enable our customers to fulfill their aspirations for experiences rather than we trying to fulfill their aspirations through products that we sell. This will involve a change in the way we build our products. It will also change the way that we deal with the customer. So this will not only require a technology change or enhancement, but it will also require retraining of our staff to ensure that a customer has a seamless experience once they plan a journey. As far as the other aspects are concerned, we're increasingly using analytics, especially across the B2C businesses. We are enhancing our online presence. Year to year, the number of packages that we sell online have only increased, and this number is something that we track very closely. During the financial year, we did close to 30% of our package tour sales were done online. This includes both international as well as domestic, customized as well as group tours. These results, despite some of the headwinds that we have witnessed, and I expect that 2019, calendar year 2019 as well as financial year 2019 will witness some more headwinds. The first obvious one being the collapse of Jet Airways. Now, the implications of this have been felt across all our businesses in India, primarily because of the fact that airfares have gone up significantly in the outbound business. In the inbound business, where people in the West book their holidays well in advance, may suddenly find that their bookings with Jet Airways no longer exist, and therefore they will now have to pay higher airfares into India. Now, this, in addition to this, the other aspect that must be mentioned is the petroleum prices, which I'm sure all of you are fully aware of. We expect that petroleum prices will continue to remain hard over the rest of the year, and as a result of which, you will see airfares remaining at a fairly high level. I do not believe that we will achieve some of the lows that we witnessed in 2018 and 2017. Despite this, we have seen that our bookings have held. The only market where we've seen our bookings sort of decline significantly has been in Sri Lanka, where consequent to the bombing of the churches as well as the hotels, we have seen our bookings get cancelled, both out of India as well as various source markets. In terms of forward bookings into both Asia, Europe, and the US, we continue to see demand. And as I mentioned earlier, that we have seen approximately a 15% growth year-on-year on our forward bookings, both across Thomas Cook as well as SOPC. And my expectation is that it will only grow from here post, now that we have put the election behind us, and we know that there is a government in place for the next 5 years. Lastly, I want to mention the acquisition that we made of DigiPhoto Entertainment Imaging, which is an acquisition we made at the beginning of this year. The transaction has been completed, and in the April to June quarter is when you will actually see their first contribution to our profitability. It will bring about a significant contribution on a quarterly basis to our bottom line, and my expectation is that DEI will continue to grow as they increase their footprint. DEI is in the souvenir imaging business and primarily operates in theme parks across the Middle East and Asia. They have a presence in the US. They are the second largest provider of souvenir photography. Now, for just to explain this a little further, souvenir photography essentially is candid photographs that are taken while you take rides in a theme park, or you're walking around a theme park, or you're based in a resort, or this thing. And I'm sure many of you have, during your trips overseas, have seen kiosks that are very evident at the entry or the exit of a theme park. And DEI has used technology, which includes facial recognition technology, as well as artificial intelligence, to source photographs and then sell it to their customers. We've seen a lot of demand. And in terms of the outlets that they operate in 14 countries, and they operate through 250 outlets. These include, the theme parks across Singapore, the zoos across Singapore, some of the theme parks in various other countries in Asia, including all the theme parks in Dubai as well as the Atlantis hotels. So, I think DEI offers a great opportunity as an acquisition, and we look forward to working closely with DEI going forward. As far as just one last comment in terms of 2019-20, while we don't give guidance, I would only like to say that while we will see some pressure in the travel businesses due to the higher airfares, my expectation is that the businesses will continue to perform well because we see airfares softening over the rest of the year. At the same time, we also believe that holidays has become an essential part of every individual's schedule over a year. As far as the inbound business is concerned, I think we don't expect any cancellations in the upcoming season, which starts in September and goes through March next year, because people would have had enough time to change their flight plans and everything else. And we believe that the Indian aviation sector will sort of fall back into place. As far as Jet is concerned, I'm not clear as to whether Jet will reappear or not. But we have managed to limit our exposure to Jet significantly. Going back to October, I think the strong risk management within the group helped us identify this as a potential risk. And we went about taking several actions which minimized the exposure that we have. Whatever little exposure that we had, we have already written out of our books, both at SOTC and Thomas Cook. And I think there was some small exposure at TCI that has also been taken out of our books. And my expectation is that the refunds will be honored. But again, you will appreciate that the refunds will not directly affect us because these are ticketing done on behalf of a passenger or a corporate. And they are being honored as we talk by guarantees provided by IATA on behalf of the airline. Ladies and gentlemen, I have nothing more to say. I will request Abhijit to open up the floor to Q&A, and Debashish will manage the Q&A, and any questions directed on the inbound business or the outbound business or the foreign exchange business will be answered by Deepak Deva, Vishal Suri, and Mahesh Iyer, respectively. Thank you very much.
Lizanne, just before that, Mr. Debashish Nandi will give a brief overview on the consolidated financials, and then we'll open the floor for Q&A.
Sure.
Okay. Good afternoon, once again. So I will take a few minutes to just run through the results for the year, and you know, thereafter we can move on to the question answer session. So as Madhavan said, I think the reported numbers that you see in the published results are not comparable at all, because for the year 17-18 we had consolidated 11 months of Quest results, as also we had booked an exceptional one-time accounting income of 5.3 billion, which is obviously missing in the 18-19 results. Now, so what I'm going to talk about is the comparable results, because that consist of the travel and the forex verticals, and that is something that we can, you know, you'll be able to relate to the performance much more easily. Okay, so the second thing is that I'll also focus on the year, because as you know, travel is a highly seasonal business, and Q4, which is the January-March quarter, typically is something that we call the investment quarter. This is a quarter where travelers don't travel at all. There is very little travel that happens. It's not the season for outbound travel. There is a season for inbound, but that's a smaller portion of the total pie. This is also the quarter where we make investments for the peak season between April and August for the outbound. And therefore, all those expenses are accounted for in that quarter. So I would like to focus on the full year performance, and that would present it on a like-to-like basis. So in terms of revenue from operations, we grew revenue from operations from 5,605 crores to 6,603 crores, which is an increase of about 18%. At a EBITDA level, we grew by 29% from 153 crores to 197, and EBITDA margins remained at around 3%. At the EBIT level, we moved up by 42% from 91.6 crores to 130.3 crores, and the EBIT margins improved from 1.6% to 1.9%. This is a combined EBIT margin of the Forex and the travel business, by the way. We managed to bring down our interest and finance cost by 15% from 86 crores to 73, and consequently, our PBT grew by 9.8 times, from 5.3 crores to 57.3 crores. So that was the overall performance. In terms of the segment, the financial services, which is the Forex business really, grew by 4% at overall level. From 265 crores to 276 crores. While that does not, you know, may not sound like a great growth, but there is the real story behind Forex. I will leave for Mahesh to elaborate on, because there is some strategies that they adopted in the last couple of years, which is paying off dividends. As you can see from the EBIT margins, from the EBIT, the EBIT went up from by 19% from 70.4 crores to 83.6 crores. On the travel side, we grew the sales from by 19% from 5,077 crores to 6,062 crores, and the EBIT went up by 34% from 135.7 crores to 181.8 crores. In terms of EBIT margins, the Forex EBIT went up from 26.5% to 30.2%, and the travel services EBIT went up from 2.7% to 3%. So that was, there's a good amount of growth in both in terms of volumes as well as in terms of the margins. I will in terms of the travel breakup, because travel has, as you know, has many subsegments within that, and I will quickly talk about the breakup of the major segments. So we'll start off with outbound. Outbound grew from by about 15% during the year, from 2,294 crores to 2,634 crores. The inbound business, without the SEIS income, which is the export incentive, moved from 660 crores to 632 crores. That's because lower income on account of the charter business. There was a degrowth in the charter, and Deepak Deva will come in later and explain that. However, if you look at the ACIS income, which is the export incentive, that grew from 24.8 crores in FY18 to 38.2 crores in this year. In MICE, the MICE did very well. It grew by 38% during the year from 809 crores to 1,114 crores. The domestic business again had a great year, 62% increase from 109 crores to 176 crores. And the DMS business, grew very well at 43%, moved up from 1,138 crores last year to 1,627 crores. And the corporate travel, the revenue from the corporate travel, as you know, we don't account for the ticket value of the ticket, we account for the commission or the margin that we make. That moved up from 140 crores to 146 crores. A quick word on the DMS business. You know that this business was, we had acquired this business in July of 2017, and it was a loss-making business at that point of time. We have, I'm very happy to say that this is the year when the business has actually moved into a break-even at the EBITDA level. So it's broken even at the EBITDA level. So then obviously the next step is to try and make it profitable going forward. So that is an important, that's the important development that will happen in the DMS business. I would now, that's the highlights in terms of the financials. I would like to now hand over, open up the question answer session, and we'll request Mahesh Iyer, the CEO of Thomas Cook, Vishal Suri, the CEO of SOTC, and Deepak Deva, who is the CEO of TCI, the inbound business, to take on the question answer. And I will supplement wherever necessary. Abhijit, over to you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone wishing to ask a question, may please press star and one on your touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Nidesh Jain from Investec Capital. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity. The first question. Just a second. Hello.
Yes.
Yeah. First question is on foreign exchange business. You mentioned that there is some strategy change which has led to muted growth on revenue, but strong growth on the margins front. So if you can just elaborate on that, that would be very useful, and how you see this business in future.
Okay. Hi, this is Mahesh Iyer. Just to explain that, as you would recollect, we've been consistent in our statement saying that for the airport operations in specific, we are only investing in airports where we actually make monies. Typically, an airport is a high investment, but the returns that you get on those investments are very low because a disproportionate share of your revenue is shared back with the airport operator. So we started to defocus that for the last 2-3 years, and our focus has moved from Tier 1 airports to Tier 2 and Tier 3 airports. So effectively what you're looking at for a comparative period FY18 to FY19 is the deficit in terms of revenue on the airports, and that's roughly about, drop from 43 crores to from 63 crores to 43 crores. That's a 20 crore gap in terms of revenue. But be mindful of the fact that this revenue, a large part of it, almost like 90-95% of that is given back to the airport operators. So very little portion of that comes back into the profitability. And that explains why despite this revenue drop, our revenue has still grown by 4%, and that's because our retail revenues actually grew by about 15% and our wholesale revenue grew by about 20%. It's the airport where we strategically decided that we will not go into expensive Tier 1 airports. So while there is a shortfall in revenue, or the growth in revenue has been at 4%, our profitability has substantially improved by 18%, moving from 70 crores to about 83 crores. So that's the change in strategy, and going forward, we have invested in about 4 or 5 Tier 2 airports, and they are panning out really well. In fact, the returns that we are making on the airport is north of about 20% in terms of return on capital employed. So that's a very attractive airport for us to operate. That's the change strategy that Debashish was mentioning about.
Sure, sure. And if you can just give some data on the prepaid Forex card, how is the traction there in terms of float, how the float has grown YOY?
Yeah. That would be so just to give you a highlight on the top line numbers, our prepaid portfolio for the full year FY19 has grown by about 16%, moving from about 320 odd million to close to about 412 million. So that's the kind of growth that we have seen. US million dollars. In terms of float, as of March 31st, 2019, we are sitting on close to about $70 million of float.
Sure, sure. What is the free cash flow generation from the travels and forex business put together in FY19 versus FY18?
We continue to track it on a, as you mentioned in the past as well, we continue to track it on a calendar year. We are, on that basis, we continue to generate between 200 and 250 crores on an annual basis from the travel and the forex businesses, obviously excluding sterling.
Sure, sure. And just lastly on the sterling, any commentary, because the performance there has not been that positive. So any commentary on that?
So sterling has been impacted. We talked about it in the past conference as well, meetings as well. Sterling has been impacted severely by in the introduction of AS-115, which has brought down the accounting revenues. Although the cash flow remains fairly undisturbed. So if you look at the result, they have reported a loss of 53 crores for the year. After adjusting for Ind AS 115, the loss would have been about 39 crores. So, between the two, there are two verticals, the timeshare vertical and the resort operations, which is in terms of basically letting out rooms to non-members. The resort operations business continues to do well. If you look at it, an independent business, it's a profitable business. It runs on an overall occupancy, it runs about 63-64% occupancy. Their rooms, they have about 2,278 rooms right now, 33 resorts across India. So that portion is doing quite well. What is not doing so well is on the timeshare side. The timeshare memberships they added about close to about 3,000 members this year, which is down from the numbers they reported in the past, which is used to be over 4,500 to 5,000 members in the past. So that segment, that particular segment is actually down. Going forward, Sterling will continue to focus on the resort operations, more on the resort operation than anything else. So far, they've been selling rooms on a on a B2B basis through other tour operators such as Yatra or Make My Trip. They are now getting into a B2C mode, so they will be selling rooms directly to consumers as well. And this is expected to boost the average realization, which is right now hovering around 3,800 per room per night, which and actually it moved up by from 3,500 last year. So there has been an upward movement there as well. The other thing which they are contemplating, along with in line with the industry, is introduction of shorter duration timeshare holidays. But that's something which is on the it's in the testing phase and not really commercially launched.
Sure, sure, sir. That's it from my side, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is on the line of Ritwik Sayed from Deep Finance. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir, just a couple of questions. Firstly, on the DMS part, you mentioned that we are break-even in FY19. Would we be profitable in Q4 FY19?
So it's a seasonal business, you know, as like any other travel business, it's a seasonal business, and therefore the profitability would not be uniform. It is unlike a, you know, other industries where you see uniform growth quarter on quarter. So that's why I said that it's always better to look at a comparable, I mean, the, for better comparison, look at a 12-month period rather than look at any 3-month period.
Okay, sure. So is it safe to assume that the negative swing of 30-35 crores in FY19 could be positive in FY20?
So in FY19, the business actually, in FY18, the business lost about 37 crores
right.
at a PBT level after all everything included. That loss came down from 37 crores to about 12 crores or 12.7
okay.
crores in the current year, in the 18-19. I don't really want to make a forward-looking statement, but yes, seeing the trends, if we are expecting that this business would, you know, get to a, you know, full-scale, some level of profitability in 19-20.
Okay, and we wouldn't be making any cash loss, or would we? Because I believe there is no interest cost in that entity.
No, there is no interest cost. We are not making a cash loss
right.
here.
So the negative 12 crore in the current year would be all depreciation, right?
The business, couple of businesses within BMS have some working capital loans.
Okay.
So they do have, they will have some interest cost. And of course, because they collect money through the banking channels by way of through card payment, etc., there would be some, you know, the banking charges, which is part of finance cost.
Sure, sure. And coming on to Sterling, you mentioned that we're losing 39 crores on a cash basis.
No, I did not say that.
Okay.
What I said was, what I said was the loss, the reported loss is 53 crores.
Mm.
If I take out the impact of Ind AS 115, the comparable number would be 39. As compared to 24 crores last year. That's what I said.
So, okay, so my question is, are we losing cash in Sterling as an entity, both the resort business and the timeshare business combined on an annual basis?
Yes, we are. Actually, we are.
Okay.
There is a cash flow. Yes, at EBITDA level, if you look at it, basically you're talking about EBITDA level profitability.
Hmm.
At EBITDA level profitability, our losses are based on FY18, we lost about 10.8 crores.
Okay.
And the amount in FY19 is similar. It's again 10.8 crores.
Okay.
More coincidence, but
okay.
the numbers are effectively the same.
Okay. Okay, sir. That's it from my side. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Deepan Mehta from Excelsior Equities. Please go ahead.
Sir, congratulations on a good set of numbers. My specific question is relating to slide number 16, where we still have human resources services 33.5, that is item number C, and then that's 13.3 in the EBIT. So what is this business? Because in the note below it is saying a post-exclusion of Quest Corp.
Yes. So the human resource business, in the Australian human resource business is to be, have two components. One, the very large component of Quest, which is in the business of human resources. And within Thomas Cook, we had a small human resource business, which is the center of learning. It's basically an academy that we run for training related to travel and tour. And in fact, we source some of our tool managers, access some of our employees from there. So that continues to be part of Thomas Cook as of now. Once the there is a deconsolidation project underway, and once that happens, this segment will disappear completely.
So this will go to Quess once the whole
yes, that's part of deconsolidation project.
So, but this particular segment did well, right? It went from 107 million loss to 13.3 million profit. Just to understand. So, hello.
Yeah.
So actually, there was a massive turnaround in this particular small business that you are operating.
Yeah, but if you really look at it, we are talking about 13.3 million, which is basically 1.3 crores, which I don't think is very material in our results.
Okay. But basically, you mean to say that there's not much scope for you to grow this business going forward, so it's just being divested off. Is that a correct
assumption? It will become part of Quess, and it will grow. It is not that the shareholders will continue to get the benefit, because the shareholder of Thomas Cook will now become the shareholder of Thomas Cook as well as Quess. So for the shareholder, it's not a loss. They will continue to enjoy the benefit of the growth by holding onto the shares of Quess.
Okay. Also, from again same slide 16, you shown vacation ownership is loss of 445.3 million.
Yes.
And if you can please help me connect that number to slide 20, when we come to slide 20, you've got the EBITDA and the PAT. So, is there anywhere we have given detailed financials of Sterling Hosiery for us to understand? And so in addition, part B of that is that in slide 20, FY14 to FY18 is as per Ind AS, right?
Yes.
And then FY19 you have also shown
Ind AS. The then applicable accounting standard. Ind AS was not there in those years.
Okay. So you've given a comparison between FY18 and FY19 where the PAT moved from 295.78 to 62.74. Had the same Ind AS system been followed? Is that a correct understanding?
Yes.
Okay. So then why at EBITDA level it has remained the same?
Yeah.
Almost minus 108.45 and minus 108.58. But the PAT as per Ind AS 18 has, rather the loss has reduced significantly. So what is the reason for that?
So obviously the difference in the EBITDA and the PAT will be in the form of interest and depreciation. Right. So the business has been able to, the business changed its model. It changed its model to from owner, initially it was ownership and then it went on to lease and now it has gone into revenue share. So because of that, okay, the cost of relating to these have been reducing over the years. So that's the reason.
Okay. So just one thought process that, in this entire reorganization that you have done, where did you not consider Sterling also? Because all the other businesses are agency type businesses or intermediary businesses, whereas Sterling is asset ownership business. So what is the logic of keeping it under the umbrella of Thomas Cook? I mean, going forward also, it is just going to keep on acting as a drag on the performance of Thomas Cook, and we'll never get a true picture of the underlying vibrancy of the travel and the financial services business.
Okay, that's a series of questions. So let me try to answer them one at a time. In terms of why we did not consider it as part of deconsolidation process, the idea was to deconsolidate the HR businesses that are there within Thomas Cook, including Quess. Quess, as you know, had become very large. It was a listed company. It is a listed company by itself, and it's also very large. It was, the analyst community of which you are a part, could not understand our results because it distorted because of a large entity like Quess. So we felt that it is better that we deconsolidate Quess and give it to the same set of shareholders so that we focus on the core travel and forex business. Sterling had nothing to do with the HR business, and therefore it is not logical to try and force fit Sterling into this process. That is why Sterling was not included. The second set of questions that you have raised is on what is that we have planned for, what plan do we have for Sterling in future?
honestly, we are not, you know, we do not have any plan for deconsolidation or anything of the sort of with Sterling right now. Sterling has been contending with issues, accounting issues like Ind AS 115, and now 116, which is on leases. So, and it's also trying to do a changeover from the business model from the traditional timeshare model to more of a hospitality company. So it is going through a series of changes. I do not think it's appropriate for them to sort of embark on, you know, this journey, a different journey at this point of time. I can't really comment on what will happen in a few years from now. For the visible future or the foreseeable future, I think it will continue to be part of Thomas Cook. We'll let you know when the thinking changes.
Thank you and all the best. I have some more questions, but I'll come back in the queue again. Thank you.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, we would like to remind participants that you may press star and want to ask a question. The next question is from the line of Mohit Khanna from Future Generali Life Insurance. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, guys. I've been tracking the stock and I'm personally holding it since some quarters now, and it's been a typical value investor a dilemma where the patience is tested before the money is created or the value is created for the shareholders. So just coming to the point here, what is the timeline for the Quess spin-off first? Secondly, do you think the travel business has a lot more legs or a potential even from the current level of profitability that has been delivered?
What I'll do is try and answer the, give you an update on the Quess deconsolidation, and then I'll hand it over to Mahesh to answer your question on the travel side. So on the Quess, we are happy to say that you've got the permission from the SEBI and the stock exchange, both the BSE and NSE, and this is true for both the entities because there are two sets of applications, one from Thomas Cook side and one from Quess. So both sides have been, both the applications have been granted, it's cleared. It's now going into NCLT, and the NCLT process is now starting off. So in terms of timeline, well, your guess is as good as mine because NCLT is something that you don't control. But we expect, now that it is end of May, it will probably take another 3 to 4 months before this process gets over.
But I was given to understand that NCLT and then probably the RBI approval because the Forex business is also...
So the RBI and NCLT can run parallel. I mean, we can run that parallel. You don't have to, it's not in sequence. See, the SEBI approval had to be taken. Stock exchange SEBI approval had to be obtained before we moved into either RBI or into NCLT because both of us are listed companies. Once that is done, we can move parallelly. Quess does not have to go to RBI, only we have to. NCLT is for both of us.
So coming into June now, you think we still have to wait one more quarter? Certainly
one more quarter. Given the track record of NCLT, at least in Mumbai, I don't think it will be a very quick process. There is a lack of speed within the benches that are working. So I do not see this happening in 1 or 2 months.
And there should be no tax consequences as we were expecting.
We have taken council opinion on this. We have been advised by multiple councils, multiple advisors on this, and we do not see a tax risk at this point of time.
Fair enough. And the second part.
Mohit, I'll take the second part from here. To your question specifically on the travel businesses and the headroom to grow, let me split that into two parts. There is outbound and there is inbound. And on the outbound, there are two parts again, which is B2B and B2C. So let me address this in three parts in specific. To begin with, on the outbound, on the B2C side, as we mentioned, we've actually seen an 18-19% growth in our revenue, and both in terms of value as well as passengers coming in and booking holidays. And as you will appreciate that, the the space in which we operate, it's a very small fragment. We are talking about less than 8% of the market, and there is so much more leg room to for us to grow in this space. Holidays are key on the agenda of any travel or any individual today, and amongst the discretionary spends that he wants to make, travel features high on the. And today, with a lot of financing options also available, EMI and stuff like that, clearly that's a segment that we believe there's a lot more opportunity for us to grow there. So clearly the headroom is very, very large. On the B2B side in specific, there is corporate travel and MICE. Both are on the B2B space. And as you know, India is becoming a global economy. A lot of business happens across the borders. And clearly with our expansion with the DMS enterprise, which are now supporting us with offshore ticketing, clearly we've seen a more than 15% growth in our top-line sales on the corporate travel side. On the MICE side, which runs on the incentives, largely the I part of the MICE, I think we've seen a very strong growth over the last 2 years, and as Devashish mentioned in his opening remarks, we've seen almost like a 30%+ growth in our top line sales for the MICE business. Margins, yields holding steady on this business. So clearly, we don't see a challenge in terms of how this business will pan out going forward. On the inbound side, while Deepak can add to what I would say, I think clearly we've seen the growth momentum continuing. Nothing has deterred from the path. India is becoming an attractive destination. People are coming in. There are more and more opportunities, and we are rejigging our portfolio. And the sweet spot in terms of profitability there, as Devashish mentioned, was the SEIS benefit that we get. And I think that kind of augurs very well for the revenue potential in this business. So clearly all this put together, we seriously see a lot of headroom for us to expand. Needless to add here that the distribution footprint is an extremely important lever in this. We've been playing the physical and the online space both. Close to about 25-27% of our holiday bookings actually happens online. And that clearly tells us that even if there's a shift in the way the customer buys his holiday, we are geared up to meet that requirement. And as our chairman mentioned in his opening remark, we are investing into the customer experience journey, which basically reduces the friction between the two channels, allows the customer to seamlessly operate between the two. So I think there are enough and more levers for us to capitalize on this opportunity as it grows going forward.
So net-net, whenever you say that you the forward bookings are up around 15%, 13% with every quarterly press release that we see, that should largely mean that the outbound side of the business is growing at that level, or is it expected to grow at more or less at that level?
It's more about, sorry Mohit, just to bring the point in here, it reflects the outbound, it also reflects part of our B2B business, more specifically the MICE side of it, because we also have a visibility of the forward bookings on the MICE.
Fair enough. Okay, and on the profitability side, so the 3% margin for the travel business on the whole, do you think 5% or so is more of a realistic expectation for this year, when we have sorted out most of the issues that were dragging us down?
So if you look at overall as a travel and related vertical, our EBIT margins are about 3%. They have moved up from about 2.7 to 3%. Our estimation is that it will remain there, or there will be a bit of an expansion that can happen. But that will be more in line with how the market changes. Because please remember, a lot of the elements or variables are outside of us, and through our procurement and putting synergies around it, and we are trying to manage that a lot more better. So we have a fair bit of visibility as to how that's panning out. And, our belief is that this margin should hold good and continue to improve from here on.
Mm-hmm. So 3% is the normalized level, or you think it's a good level of margins in this business?
I must also add here, Mohit, that please be mindful of the fact that these margins that you see here take into account the losses of the DMS business. And as Devashish mentioned in response to the previous question, the DMS business are turning around. We've seen the level of losses actually coming down. So clearly when they get into a break-even and start generating profits, this margin will start looking even better. And also the online business, as we've been saying, the last 3-4 years, we've been incubating the business and investing in it. Our estimation is that FY21, they should be at a break-even and generating cash profits. So clearly, as these businesses start turning around, clearly there will be visibility of us in terms of margin expanding from the current levels that we are at.
Right. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Amrish Mishra from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Yeah.
Hello. Yeah. Hi, sir. Just a couple of questions from my side. I just wanted to understand how is the retail wholesale mix in our forex business moved, particularly coming from your comments initially just to an earlier question that you were restructuring it a bit in terms of moving from tier 1 to tier 2 airports, etc. So just wanted to understand as to how to that mix has moved. And secondly, sir, like you mentioned that you're generating an FCF of close to about 200 to 250 crores in travel to forex. So, in terms of investing into sterling, how much are we looking to put into sterling to turn around? Just in the context of the fact that now loss is just close to about 10 crores on the EBITDA side. So probably it's on the verge of a turnaround or something. I mean, how do you kind of... see it, because fixed costs will be pretty high in this business and your top line is continuing to kind of catch up on the positive side. So how do you see this kind of, a turnaround? I mean, how much...
So let me break this into two parts. I'll take the first part of Forex and then leave to Devashish to explain the sterling part of it. On the Forex side, as we mentioned to you, and as responding to the previous question, the change in the strategy has been largely around the airport side. It's about saying that the tier 1 airports are expensive to operate. The revenue share that you pay to the airport operators are substantially large, and the little money that's left on the table really didn't make economic sense for us to kind of go and expand this portfolio. So our focus for the last almost like 12 months has been to look at tier 2 and tier 3 airports, and that's what we have done really well. We've got a clutch of about 5 or 6 airports that we have started operating in the last 12 months or so, which we believe are very strong, both in terms of profitability and return on capital that's deployed on these airports. On the retail side in specific, we mentioned for the full year FY19, our portfolio grew by about 14%, moving from a revenue level of 168 crores to 192 crores. And that's a very strong growth that we have seen. You will appreciate that Forex is a very mature business within our group, and a 14-15% growth on this portfolio is a very strong growth that we have seen. This is buoyed by the fact that travel as a segment has been growing. We've invested into the student segment. Our prepaid portfolio has been growing. So clearly, there's a lot of stickiness with the customer through the prepaid product. Travel as an unit within the overall ecosystem growing, and that fuels a lot of demand for foreign currencies. And wholesale happens to be a byproduct in that sense, because we are suppliers or key suppliers in managing the demand and supply in the marketplace. And clearly, we balance that out very well, which also leaves some current money on the table for us. So for our view is that on the retail side, we expect this growth momentum to continue. We will see a 11-12% growth into our retail portfolio. Airports, once it starts correcting and you have a comparable number, you'll actually see that the portfolio will start seeing growth, and we expect that to about 10-12% growth on the airport side. And wholesale will always be a balancing figure. We've said that on record before. It's not an area that we focus on, but yes, there are periods when there are high demand of currency notes, and we capitalize on the opportunity by becoming the preferred supplier in the market.
Sure. And the airports, the number that you mentioned, 63 crores moving to 43 crores this year, that's captured separately, or this is captured within the retail part of the business?
Yeah, it's captured in the same part of the overall forex or the financial services segment that you see in the segmental revenue.
But you said the retail moved from 168 crores to 192 crores. So
no. Retail is separate. For airports doesn't sit within retail.
Okay, fine. Thanks. And on the sterling part of the business, sir?
Yeah, on the sterling part, your question basically is around the operating EBITDA. So the losses of about 10 or 10.8 crores that is there.
Yeah.
So in addition, the things that are there in addition is obviously the adjustment for the India's impact.
I was just referring to the fact that if you see the top line is increasing for this particular business, EBITDA has been more or less 10 crores negative, which is not a big number compared to what it was like in FY16. So, and this is more of a, I would imagine this is more of a fixed cost business. So, I mean, how much would you be how much would you be investing into the business out of the 200-250 crores free cash that you would generate? And, you know, how close you would be to, you know, break even in this, you know, what level of revenues you think you should be able to break even?
Okay. I misunderstood your question. So Sterling actually doesn't require any further investment because what they have moved into is a virtually zero capex model, because any additional, they're adding resource every year, five, six resource every year. But all these are right now through the revenue sharing mechanism. So they come completely fitted out by from the owner side itself. So all they do is to just take it on, brand it as a Sterling property, and then start selling the rooms. So there is no capex involved. So none of the cash flows of the travel and the forex business would get diverted into Sterling. So there is nothing like that. In terms of it is one comment that you did make. It's a reasonably fixed cost business with the revenue sharing coming in. It is no longer that way a fixed cost business. The attempt is to make it cost more variable. In line with the, you know, the sales line or the top line.
Yeah.
So, you know, so this will become, the profitability would then be guided more by sales than be, you know, purely guided by the fixed cost.
Sure. And this year we also acquired DG Photo, that company.
Yes.
Where will that get classified? Yes. Will it be part of travel and forex, or will it be part of something else that you would classify it?
So what we intend to do is that we will, we have not published any result because this is the current quarter. April, June will be the first quarter. We intend to put it, to keep it as a separate segment.
Sure. And for FY...
In fact, if you look at our segment results, you will find one segment there, which is only on the asset side, asset and liability, basically the capital employed side, called DG40 Imaging Services. Which okay. Right now holds only a asset and liability number, doesn't have a profit number. That is the segment where it will start appearing.
Okay. And for FY, like FY 19 to 20, when we compare the numbers for this particular financial year, the numbers will be comparable. Unlike for FY 18 to 19 in your presentation, you've given reported and comparable. So
yes.
19 to 20 will be completely comparable numbers. Right?
Absolutely, yes. It's a big relief for us as well.
And just one more last question. In terms of the free cash that you generate, 200 to 250 crores, what's the plan there? I mean,
in terms of, what will be going forward? See, this we have been continuously sort of harvesting this cash and putting it back into the business.
Sure.
If you see over the last five or six years or the last 4 years specifically, we have made investments, very heavy investment in the travel side. We bought SOTC, we bought TCI, the CETA, TCI, the inbound business. We invested in the DMS business and now into DEI. So we have made and of course, Pune, Hong Kong. So we have made a series of investments in the travel business. We also bought Tata, we expanded into Lanka and also bought Tata Capital's forex and travel business. So all these investments have come out of our own cash. So that is how we intend to take it forward. And obviously some amount of money is getting reinvested into Thomas Cook's core travel and forest business for, further growth.
Sure. Okay, fine. That's it from my side. I'll come back with you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Claire Burns from Apollo Investment Management. Please go ahead.
Thank you. You have a lot more capital tied up in financial services than in the past. Why is that?
So, the nature of the, you're saying that the larger amount of capital is tied up in the financial services as compared to the travel business. That's the question, if I get it right, correct?
No, compared to the past years for the financial services business. So, for example, 2 or 3 years ago,
mm-hmm.
The amount was 3 billion rupees, now 8.5.
Yeah.
Why is that? It and on a net basis, you used to have free float from the financial business. Now it's much more asset heavy. Why that transition?
Essentially, foreign exchange business is a business where we have our inventory is really cash. So the increase in the segment asset is primarily on increase the bank balances that we have, which is about 2.8 billion rupees. There is a small increase in debtors, which is on the corporate forex side. That's about 240 million, but that's offset by some other items. So net increase is only about 100 million there. But so it's primarily the bank balances, which is 2,800 million increase in the bank balances. So that's where it is really. Unfortunately, in forex is such a business that we can't offset by holding back payables because this is relatively lower on payables. Therefore, we can't balance out the working capital impact of higher cash holdings.
Okay. So you've got 8429 of segment assets, 2.8 is bank balances, and like 6 billion is currency notes, is it?
Yes.
Why do you need to do any more currency notes than in the past?
This is also, it's also a function of the year ending. Okay, so this time the year ending was the 30th and 31st of March, happened to be a weekend, which is a Saturday, Sunday. That also leads to accumulation of cash because we can't do, normally any excess cash holding tends to get exported. And surplus currency notes tend to get exported, which you would not have been able to do because overseas banks would not have worked on those days. So see, the scenario changes from year to year depending on where the year end actually falls. I do not see a issue there. I think it's aberration, primarily because of the year ending, and this would have normalized it would have normalized in the month of April itself.
But I still don't understand the change over 2 or 3 years. I mean, sure there were quarterly fluctuations, but in the last 5-6 quarters, the range is between 5 and 10 billion assets, whereas it used to be 3. And if you look at it net of the liabilities, that's a swing from negative to positive to significant capital tied up. And I would have thought it would be going in the other direction with your prepaid cards and so on, which clearly do give you float. So
the prepaid card actually is both an asset and a liability because I receive money from the customer. Yeah. When I receive money from the customer, it's an obligation to the customer, so it's a liability. I put that money in the bank, so it becomes an asset. So it effectively is an asset as well as a liability. So it's not a single entry really in the balance sheet.
Okay. So how do you think about the return on capital in this segment, and is it adequate?
Well, we never think any return on capital employed is adequate. The idea is to improve the return on capital employed in all spheres of the business, whether it is forex or travel or sterling. So that's the mantra we go by, so to say. But if you're asking me for a target, I'm sorry, I'll not be able to give out a target right now. Probably we should have a more detailed conversation at some other point of time.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Manjur Bashini from Sundaram Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good evening to the management there. So the cash on the balance sheet of 645 odd crores, what portion of this cash is freely usable for acquisitions and all that, and what is mandatorily to be maintained in order to continue in your financial services business?
Part of the cash is restricted in the sense that part of the cash is used in the business and part is what is useful for deployment into investments, etc. So out of the total cash that we have on the balance sheet as on 31st, actually cash and cash equivalent was close to about 750 crores. Of which about the major part is lying in Thomas Cook and the, you know, Thomas Cook and basically the travel and the forex business. There's very little cash lying in Sterling. A large part is, you know, and cash is fungible, so a large part of this is available for investments or into acquisitions or anything else. Having said that, even within the business, we might need, even within the foreign exchange business, for example, there could be days when you need large amounts of cash because of a sudden fluctuations in the supply-demand situation. So some part of the surplus, well, you call it surplus, can also get used in the forex business for a few days. And we have seen volatility in the foreign exchange business in the last few months. And those are the times when, you know, some of the surplus cash also got deployed in the forex business. Does that answer your question?
No. Can you please elaborate here? What sort of volatility in the forex business will need for this sort of investment from your end?
Maybe I'll hand it over to Mahesh to explain the volatility and the consequent impact on the forex business.
So, Manju, typically what happens in this business is that there is a seasonal demand that comes up, and typically this has been an election year. There is usually a lot of demand that comes from currency notes in this market, and to the previous person on the question also, there's a question around saying how is it that we are holding so much of cash. Clearly the cash that we have on our books is to supply it to our customers, both B2B and B2C. We deal with B2B and B2C customers both. As I mentioned, we play the role of balancing the demand and supply in the market. So, and since we have a license that allows us to import cash based on demand and supply to the market, we play that role very actively. And clearly that's where the demand actually comes in. So if there is a depreciation in the rupee, you'll suddenly find that there's a lot of demand that comes from the B2B players. So we become the preferred choice to supply currency, and that's when we import a currency from our vendor partners overseas, and that's where we'll have a kind of requirement of cash coming up over a short period in time. Obviously, the cash cycle that we typically operate is anywhere between 1 day to 1.5 days. That's the typical cycle for converting foreign currency into cash. So we will use this money on a very short-term basis, and that's the point that Devashish was making, that to fund the business for meeting their requirements, which generates revenue, we may need to use the cash that we have on our books.
Okay. So on a ballpark basis, if we have to understand how much would be spent incrementally or potential amount that can go for further investments, what should we assume? Is it a major part of the 750 crores is available, or some numbers if you can, what percentage of this cash is freely usable? If there can be some number put to it, it will be helpful for us to understand.
I would not like to put a specific number to it, but I would like to sort of conclude by saying most of the cash is available. Having said that, you know, as we say, we analyze cash generation is in the range of 200 to 250 crores, so number is never a static number, so that keeps on growing. So a large part is available, yes.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Shashank Palan from Rockstud Capital. Please go ahead.
Thank you, sir, for the opportunity. I have two questions, perhaps. One is in regards with the brand name of Thomas Cook, which the company is using, which is about to getting renewed in the year 2020. So is the company planning to renew it, or what's the strategy behind it? I'm asking you this because, you know, globally, the Thomas Cook PLC brand name is getting a tarnish a bit because of its recent issues in regards with its debt.
Shashank, let me correct you there. The brand is available with us till 2025 and not 2020.
Okay.
So the runway that we have is a slightly more longer than the one stated by you as 2020. Clearly, as we speak, we already have a plan in place in terms of how we need to migrate and what steps we will do. It's all about timing, and you'll appreciate the fact that any kind of a brand exercise is a fairly complex, long, and money-consuming, resource-consuming exercise. So we've got to be very mindful about it. As a management team, we are cognizant of this approach. We are working towards it, and when the time is right, we will actually come out to the market and talk to all about how we are going about doing that. But our hunch at this point in time is that at somewhere early 2020 is when we will start this journey of brand migration, so that we have a fairly long runway to navigate through this entire journey of brand migration.
Okay. Second thing which I would like to know is there any update in regards with a Quest Corp or spin-off thing, any timeline which has been decided?
So probably you missed the answer to an earlier question, where we said that we have now received, both Quest and Thomas Cook have now received the approvals from SEBI and Stock Exchange. So the next stage is to go to NCLT, which we have just filed with NCLT. And so the NCLT process will take its course. So probably then it take probably, it's really difficult to put a timeline to it, but maybe expecting another 3 to 4 months before we get the approval from NCLT. And there are two NCLTs involved. There is Mumbai and Bangalore, obviously. So it's probably safe to assume about 4 months from now.
Okay. And lastly, in regards with, there was some service export incentive which the company was expected to receive in Q4 FY19.
Yes.
Of somewhere around ₹32 to 35 crore. Is this amount being received?
Yes. So the total amount of SEIS claim received during the year is 382 million across all the entities in the Thomas Cook Group.
The amount you said is?
38.2 crores.
Okay. That's it from my side.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Lakshmi Narayan from SBI Gap Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Good evening, gentlemen, and thanks for taking my question. I only had one question on Sterling. If you recall earlier conference calls, you had said that the India's accounting change made you pause and then reevaluate the strategy, and hence there was some lost business there. If you could talk a little bit, give us some more color on how you are viewing the business now. And there seems to be a change in terms of getting into this franchise sort of arrangements with property owners and so on, and probably going through the BTC route or something. So how does that change potentially things? And also, if I were to compare your numbers with, say, Mahindra Holiday and Resorts, they probably are a slightly lower revenue, but they are far better profitable. So if you could give us when or what level of revenue could take you, you know, in terms of EBITDA or a decent level of profitability, when are you targeting that, and what level of revenue number is the tipping point where you jump over from losses to profitability? That's been some time in waiting, so that's my question.
Okay, Lakshmi, so I'll Debashish here. So I will, unfortunately, I will not be able to make any forward-looking statements, so I'll not quantify any potential future revenue numbers or profitability. But I'll try to answer you on the first. So I'll not answer the second part of your question, but I'll try and answer the first part. On the first part, obviously Sterling, along with the rest of that industry, has been struggling, if I may use the word, under the impact of Ind AS 115. And it has been looking for ways and means of avoiding further aggravation of results from the impact of Ind AS 116, which is on lease accounting. So given these two, so what they have done is two things. One is that they have moved away from the traditional model, which was initially it was ownership model. So they have moved away from the ownership model, moved into leasing model. So and from the leasing model, they now moved into a revenue share model. So where they share the revenue that is generated in a particular resort with the owner of the property. So that neutralizes, basically that there's two things. The revenue and the cost are more in line with each other. It's not that we incur a fixed amount of cost irrespective of whatever revenue is generated. And also it takes away the impact of the lease accounting norms under Ind AS 116. So I think that's one thing that they have done. The other thing that they have done is that given the fall in the number of new memberships, as I mentioned sometime back, The new members added is about 3,000 this year as opposed to typically 4,500 to 5,000 in other years. They have embarking more on expanding the resort operations business, which is very simply the letting out of rooms that they have to non-members. Earlier they used to do it through tour operators, so they operated through on a B2B model. And now they have moved into a B2C, so they are offering direct booking facility to their customers, to potential customers. Those are the couple of changes in the business model. This is expected to bring down the impact or I would say contain the impact of the new accounting standards on their books. So while it will not take away anything from the existing ones, but at least it will not add to their problems. On the other hand, the strategy of going B2C and letting out more and more rooms to non-members would improve the immediate revenue.
Yeah, thanks for that. Just one thing conceptually that I can't understand is that if all these changes are accounting related and they don't affect cash flows or the intrinsic value of the business, and you should correct me if I'm wrong, then why should there be a drastic course correction or a change in strategy?
It does not impact cash flow, Lakshmi. Accounting changes do not impact cash flow.
That's what I'm saying. So if there is no change to your underlying cash flows that the business potentially could generate, why should there be a total turnaround of...
I think you misinterpreted what I said. I never said accounting is causing all these changes. I said that there has been a fall in the number of timeshares that has been sold. The number of memberships sold has gone to about 3,000 from the earlier levels of 4,500 to 5,000. So, obviously there is a fall in revenue because of that. Okay? And that needs to be made up. And one has to grow on top of that.
And what is the real underlying business reason for the fall in numbers?
Lakshmi, can I just finish what I said and then I come to the next question?
Yeah.
Okay. So, if the membership revenues are degrowing, it has to be compensated by the other segment, which is resort operations. And resort operations, while it's actually showing significant growth year on year, and it's a profitable business in its own right, it needs to be supplemented. The B2B obviously is not enough for ensuring additional growth to offset the losses from the timeshare business, and therefore it has embarked on the B2C approach. These are the only two ways to sell, B2B and B2C. So B2C has not tried before. They are now trying B2C as an additional mechanism.
Okay.
Now I can answer your next question.
Yeah. That's very clear to me. The only follow-up question I had is, why was there a significant fall in what is the underlying business reason for which there was a big fall in the member additions is something that I'm not aware of. If you could throw a bit of light on that.
This is an old question actually. This has been there for the last couple of years. In fact, we talked about that, 2 years back. We saw this trend coming in post-demonetization. I guess a lot of memberships were being bought by people who had surplus cash. And when I say cash, I mean cash as in cash in hand.
Okay.
And this business runs on EMI, so the monthly installments were small. So that cash has disappeared from the business, and I think that's one reason. The other obviously is the product has a tenure of 25 years, which may not go down very well with the younger generation. So a guy in his 20s would not probably buy a 25-year membership. Okay, he would rather go for something more short-term, something which gives an immediate sort of satisfaction.
Fair point. I think people are moving away from owning to renting.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question. I now hand the conference over to the management for their closing comments.
So, thank you once again for attending this conference. Thomas Cook, I think in 18-19 has delivered an excellent set of results in terms of growth in sales as in volumes as well as in profitability. And like Madhavan said right in the beginning, the newest addition to the family DEI would only add to the volumes and the profitability, and you'll see the results from the next quarter onwards. So thank you all for attending this conference, and we hope to see you again
in the next conference post our results in July.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of IIFL Capital Limited, that concludes today's conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.